on April 2nd, 1995 at 400 Third Street on the Isle. The subject of this interview is the effects of the EPA on the oil industry and the effects it has on society.
I suppose you don't know something about me as a person. Well, I'm a true environmentalist. I was born and raised on a farm in Mississippi. And from there, I entered the college ranks to get my final degree in education. Kind of strange to find a businessman who has an educational background. But from the teaching profession, I went to Texaco Incorporated within 13 years. I left Texaco Incorporated and went to work with a company that was just starting up in business called MacPherson Oil Products. And we literally were the sales and marketing department from the ground up in that company. Its sales exceeded $80 million when I left the organization. Like all men, I suppose you might say, we enjoy the challenge of the hunt. And the process, again, of helping develop the marketing department for Anna Lubricants and Birmingham, Alabama. In the span of time between the time I left MacPherson Oil Company, I was a consultant in waste oil and used oil business related to oil distribution, and I worked with people in Savannah, Georgia. So I have a continuous interest in the environment. I have a continuous interest in how that environment is affected by what our business does to that environment. And because of that, I got in depth with it. And more or less for 6 years, I was truly involved with it to understand it, to help correct the business community and what actually was trying to be accomplished by the federal government and its mandates. We first got involved with the product in handling used and waste oil. When I was with MacPherson Oil Company, we saw it coming as a requirement that somewhere in time that it would have to be as what we refer in the industry as a closed loop system. That would mean that from the time that oil is developed from the ground to going through the refining process to the user and then back to a refining process. So, to start with, the EPA is the first arm that we have to deal with, and the EPA is nothing more than a part of the federal government that's in charge to take care of our environment. The Congress passed an act in 1976, kind of interesting that was in the rough end of the country. It's called Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, and everyone refers to it as RECA. The environmental regulations contain the most stringent laws that are on the book in the United States. For example, if you went out and committed a crime three times, let's say that you, I hope you wouldn't do this, but let's say that you shot three different people and you were only convicted on one crime, then that's the crime you'd be tried for. But in the regulations, literally, if you can conceive this, you can be convicted of not the crime that you've been brought to court on, but literally other crimes in behind it. That's pretty tough to understand. But the concept that you hear referred to is from cradle to grave. The Resource Recovery Act, what it does, it makes people responsible. It makes them responsible for their acts in handling hazardous waste. And contrary to most beliefs, it also makes them responsible for the pollutants that they may develop or cause. The major concern has been of the polluting of the water that you drink, the air you breathe, and the earth itself. In all three of those items that can be polluted, we're talking about preservation of the earth and human health. For example, the only thing in life that you can't do without is water. water you have to have in order to sustain life here. And if we contaminate the water to a point that we are infiltrating our body with chemical and hazardous waste, then we ultimately are causing disease, germs, and things that we have no cure for. In short, we can ultimately destroy ourselves. So Congress and the people that got behind the movement for the environment was the hippies of the late 60s and 70s. And we need to thank those people for being observers of our earth. I also think that the American Indian has a lot to do with our understanding of life, because they insist that the environment has to be in balance with man. And that, I think, lies a key to the success of this department, these laws and regulations, that we find a balance that people can live by. If we get too radical to one side or the other, then we're going to destroy ourselves on either side we go to. But Congress passed and set up the Environmental Protection Agency, or as everyone refers to them, as the EPA, and Congress passes the regulations, and then the EPA has to amend or add rules to the laws in order to make them workable. And then the EPA works in conjunction with the states. The states, in turn, have their own environmental division. For instance, the state of Alabama, we are talking about the Department of Environmental Management. Now, under the regulations, the federal people establish the laws that the states have to abide by. They can make these regulations as same with the federal, or they can be more severe, but they can be no less in their requirements as the federal regulations. Ironically enough, today there are some states that cannot manage their own program, so the federal people are in charge of seeing that they carry out their programs correctly. I'd like to kind of give you some ideas of how encompassing these regulations are. And keep in mind that the people that are responsible for causing the environmental problems have to accept their liability. The key word that we're going to have to keep in mind in working with environmental regulations is the generator, or the possible responsible parties. Those are key words in any type of crime involving the environmental regs. If I could, let me give you some examples of some instances that have been involved in environmental occurrences. One that sticks out in my mind very clearly as to the severity of the laws and how they may be out of balance to some degree, that occurred in California. As you know, California is one of the most strict states as far as environmental requirements. But it seems like that the United States government had a shipbuilding dock in this particular port town in California during World War II. Of course, the war ended and the town was given the property. The town, in turn, after a period of time, sold the property. The property was sold to an investor. The investor started to set up a zoning and a construction program on the property. Once it occurred, there was a section of the land that had to be brought to a ground level or to a specific ground height in order to build whatever type of business that they were going to build there. They called in this contractor to do the work. Well, if you can imagine the top of a hill in a valley, and you have to push the top of the hill down to the valley in order to level the land to build the business. Well, in the process, the EPA or their state government found that the land had been polluted with hazardous material. I'm going to assume it's trichloroethylene or something of that nature that was used in scraping off the ship barnacles or whatever. As the course of the case unraveled, the contractor was the guy that was cited because he was the guy that polluted the land that was not polluted by moving the dirt from the top of the valley, top of the hill to the valley. So you can see that there's not a real good justification there. But under regulations as they are written, he was the polluter. He was the guy that was responsible for moving it. Of course, in turn, he'll have to go back and sue everyone involved prior to his moving that dirt because they were the generator. Mm-hmm. And it's a little out of balance, and there needs to be a balance. Give you another example. There was a marsh outside of Jacksonville, Florida, that the company had developed on the edge of a lowland. And this company was an oil collector. The oil collector went into the community of Jacksonville, collected oil, brought it back, and put it into tanks. A problem with this was that the tanks were old, used underground tanks that were brought above ground to comply with the regulations taking care of underground gas tanks. And people getting rid of these tanks either gave or sold the tanks to this company at a minimum cost. He used the tanks to collect the waste oil in. The problem was that these tanks had minute pinholes, and there was waste oil dripping out of the bottom of the tanks all around this lowland or marshlands. And marshlands are very important to our society because that's the point of ecological balance. They're real important to us as individuals and as a country. Mm-hmm. So the gentleman who owned the company could not pay for the cleanup. So the federal people took over. They appointed a committee to look into all the people that he had collected oil from. Remember the key word, back to the generator. They went back to those people as possible responsible parties looking for the generator because the generator becomes responsible. In each of these cases that we've talked about, the regulations are so encumbersome that the cost is phenomenal. For instance, you've got to have engineers go on site and do all the things that the law requires. But hell, it's very simple. If you got a mess, you clean it up. You don't have to go through all these studies in order to make the job happen. Mm-hmm. But that's the contention that I have with the regulations. Mm-hmm. I'm for the cleanup. I think we should do it because we're going to have people in the future that are going to depend on us doing the right things. There's nothing right for them to have clear drinking water and clear air to breathe. But back to the story, the company couldn't pay. They went back to all the people that were involved in the contribution of his waste oil into these tanks. Consequently, it's about $12-15 million already spent on that one little 4-acre plot of land, and it's still not cleaned up like it should be. Give you another instance that young people don't realize, and even business people don't realize to the degree today, that where there have been pollutants and hazardous material found on property, it's to a point that no lending institution will make a loan for somebody to buy the property until they make an environmental impact study. We call them audits on the property. There's a couple of phases of the audit. One is first to determine what's been on the property. Secondly, does that industry or that person or that thing cause a hazardous pollutant or a pollutant to the earth? If it has, then it's got to be cleaned up, or the institution won't make the loan. It's that simple. So here's another additional cost that's been added to it. For example, if you know that there's a house there that it's been there for 20 years and you want to buy that house, are you sure you want to buy it? Because there could be some hazardous material that's been on that spot. To me, that's a little unrealistic. But it's getting to that point that people are jumping to the point they don't want to spend money on a piece of property unless they know it's clear and clean to be received. that's just some background into the environmental regulations and the way it's set up. And it also is a key point that we can kick in and talk about waste oil and how the oil industry is affected by the EPA and the regulations.